Next up, Ken's last extravaganza. This week, filling in for Queer Waves, Taylor is not here. Taylor will not be here today. Taylor will not be on Queer Waves today. So today, instead of Queer Waves,
Thank you. I live on a street where there are many, many cars and trucks and factories that pump and bang and grind all night and day. It is a miracle that I can write poetry or sleep or talk on the telephone or that my lover will visit me here. There is so much noise. Every few minutes a jet comes in low or a prop job swings down like a kamikaze. There is an airport at the end of my street. The New Age people say that you choose all these things. Choose the cars and trucks and airplanes, me and all of my neighbors. Well, maybe this is true. Maybe we can't live without all this goddamn noise. Maybe I need the noise to write poems, make love, and eat. I'm going to hang a sign out my window that says, "More noise, please," or "Thank you for making noise." Maybe we are the kind of people who need to have what we don't want just to get along. Myself, I could not sleep last night, and I could not close the window either. I tried to tear the window out of its frame and put it in a closed position, banging and ripping with the hammer and the screwdriver, standing on the window ledge in my socks 3 stories up. But the window wouldn't come out. The factory was screaming, and the trucks were rumbling, and the whole world was praying for silence, and it was up to me to shut the window, and I couldn't get it down. It was just making more noise. A jet went by and all the people waved. "Thanks," I yelled. The shift changed without a lull in production at the big plant across the street. The workers lined up at the bus stop watching me with my hammer. I put sponge stoppers in my ears, but I can't stand those things for more than 3 minutes. Finally, I put my head between 2 pillows. It is the same every night. I love you. Without you, I could not live. I would not have written this poem.
OP Austin. You're currently listening to Ken's Last Ever Radio Extravaganza. Ken's Last Ever Radio Extravaganza is airing today, only today. It is not on Tuesday night from 6:30 to 7. That would be when you would hear it otherwise, from Tuesday starting at and ending at Tuesdays from 6:30. For more information about Ken's Last Ever Radio Extravaganza, there's a webpage you can look at. The address is counterfolk.com/last-ever. You can read about it. You can listen to all the other ones. You can't listen to today's because it doesn't happen yet. It has to happen for another hour before you can listen to it. So don't listen to this. This is a live, improvised sound collage happening now and later. Call and talk about it. 512-472-5667, or send email to ken@counterfolk.com. Attention, Ken's Last Ever Radio Extravaganza. Caution to our listeners, the board advises you that the views and sounds that you hear may not ever become complete. If you seek completion, then you should listen for resolution. This is suspension.
Thank you. As I mentioned in my opening remarks, our commanders on the ground have got the authorities necessary to deal with violence, and will in firm fashion. And that's what by far the vast majority of the Iraqis want. They want security so they can advance toward a free society. Once we transfer our sovereignty, we'll enter into a security agreement with the government to which we pass sovereignty, the entity to which we pass sovereignty. Seen recently. Some citizens are fearful of stepping up, and they were happy they were. They're not happy they're occupied. I wouldn't be happy if I were occupied either. They do want us there to help with security, and that's why this transfer of sovereignty is an important signal to send, and it's why it's also important for them to hear we will stand with them until they become a free country.
Motioned to the guards outside to bring in the prisoner they were leaving. The poet ambled forth, shambled into the cell. The door clanged shut again. Ambleforth made one or two uncertain movements from side to side, as though having some idea that there was another door to go out of, and then began to wander up and down the cell. He had not yet noticed Winston's presence. His troubled eyes were gazing at the wall about a meter above the level of Winston's head. He was shoeless. Large dirty toes were sticking out of the holes in his socks. He was also several days away from a shave. A scrubby beard covered his face to the cheekbones, giving him an air of ruffianism that went oddly with his large, weak frame and nervous movements. Winston roused himself a little from his lethargy. He must speak to Ampleforth and risk the yell from the telescreen. It was even conceivable that Ampleforth was the bearer of the razor blade. "Ampleforth," he said. There was no yell from the telescreen. Ampleforth paused, mildly startled. His eyes focused themselves slowly on Winston. "Ah, Smith," he said, "you too. What are you in for?"
"To tell you the truth." He sat down awkwardly on the bench opposite Winston. "There is only one offence."
"Is there not?" he said. "And you have committed it?"
"Apparently I have."
He put a hand to his forehead and pressed his temples for a moment, as though trying to remember something.
"These things happen," he began vaguely. "I have been able to recall one instance, a possible instance. It was an indiscretion, undoubtedly. We were producing a definitive edition of the poems of Kipling. I allowed the word God to remain at the end of a line. I could not help it," he added almost indignantly, raising his face to look at Winston. "It was impossible to change the line. The rhyme was rod. You realize that there are only 12 rhymes to rod in the entire language?" For days I had racked my brains. There was no other rhyme.
The expression on his face changed. The annoyance passed out of it, and for a moment he looked almost pleased. A sort of intellectual warmth, the joy of the pedant who has found out some useless fact, shone through the dirt and scrubby hair.
"Has it ever occurred to you," he said, "that the whole history of English poetry has been determined by the fact that the English language lacks rhymes?"
No, that particular thought had never occurred to Winston, nor in the circumstances did it strike him as very important or interesting. "Do you know what time of day it is?" he said. Ampleforth looked startled again.
"I had hardly thought about it.
Flitted round the walls, as though he half expected to find a window somewhere.
"There's no difference between night and day in this place. I do not see how one can calculate the time."
They talked desultorily for some minutes, then, without apparent reason, a yell from the telescreen bade them be silent. Winston sat quietly, his hands crossed. Ampleforth, too large to sit in comfort on the narrow bench, fidgeted from side to side, clasping his lank hands first round one knee, then round the other. The telescreen barked at him to keep still. Time passed. 20 minutes? An hour? It was difficult to judge. Once more there was a sound of boots outside. Winston's entrails contracted. Soon, very soon, perhaps in 5 minutes, perhaps now, the tramp of boots would mean that his own turn had come.
George Bush, lead on.
They're
better off with Saddam Hussein. Would be better off with Saddam Hussein in power. And make the world. I also know that there's an historic opportunity here to change the world, and it's very important for the loved ones of our troops to understand that the mission is an important, vital mission for the security of America and for the ability to change the world for the better. Let's see. Ed.
President, good evening. You've talked on the, I'd like to ask you about the Southeast Japan.
And the reason I did is because there had been a lot of threat intelligence from overseas. And so part of it had to do with the Genoa G8 conference that I was going to attend. And I asked at that point in time, let's make sure we were paying attention here at home as well. And that's what triggered the report. The report itself, I've characterized it as mainly history. And I think when you look at it, you'll see that it was talking about the 97. That that Bin Laden might want to hijack an airplane, but as you said, not to fly into a building, but perhaps to release a person in jail who's served as a black male. And of course, that concerns me. All those reports concern me. As a matter of fact, I was dealing with terrorism a lot as the president when George Tenet came in to brief me, and that's where I got my information.
Thank you. Something's changed, it ain't hard to define. Jesse's got himself a girl and I wanna make her mine. And she's watching him with those eyes, and she's loving him.